Mother Yashoda was always overwhelmed by intense love for Krishna, not knowing who Krishna was or how powerful he was. Because of maternal affection for Krishna, she never even cared to know who he was. Therefore, when she saw that her son had become excessively afraid, she threw the stick away and desired to bind him so that he would not commit any further naughty activities. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has no beginning and no end, no exterior and no interior, no front and no rear. In other words, he is all-pervading. Because he is not under the influence of the element of time, for him there is no difference between past, present, and future. He exists in his own transcendental form at all times. Being absolute beyond relativity, he is free from distinction between cause and effect, although he is the cause and effect of everything. That unmanifested person, who is beyond the perception of the senses, had now appeared as a human child, and Mother Yashoda, considering him her own ordinary child, began binding him to the wooden mortar with a rope. When Mother Yashoda was trying to bind the offending child, she saw that the binding rope was short by a length, the width of 2 fingers. Thus she brought another rope to join to it. This new rope also was short by a measurement of 2 fingers, and when another rope was joined to it, it was still 2 fingers too short. As many ropes as she joined, all of them failed. Their shortness could not be overcome. Thus Mother Yashoda joined whatever ropes were available in the household, but still she failed in her attempt to bind Krishna. Mother Yashoda's friends, the elder gopis in the neighborhood, were smiling and enjoying the fun. Similarly, Mother Yashoda, although laboring in that way, was also smiling. All of them were struck with wonder. Because of Mother Yashoda's hard labor, her whole body became covered with perspiration, and the flowers and comb were falling from her hair. When child Krishna saw his mother thus fatigued, he became merciful to her and agreed to be bound. O Maharaj Parikshit, this entire universe with its great exalted demigods like Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, and Lord Indra is under the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yet the Supreme Lord has one transcendental attribute. He comes under the control of his devotees. This was now exhibited by Krishna in this pastime. Neither Lord Brahma, nor Lord Shiva, nor even the Goddess of Fortune, who is always the better half of the Supreme Lord, can obtain from the Supreme Personality of Godhead the deliverer from this material world such mercy as was received by Mother Yashoda. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, the son of Mother Yashoda, is accessible to devotees engaged in spontaneous loving service, but he is not as easily accessible to mental speculators, to those striving for self-realization by severe austerities and penances, or to those who consider the body the same as the self. While Mother Yashoda was very busy with household affairs, the Supreme Lord Krishna observed twin trees known as Yamala Arjuna, which in a former millennium had been the demigod sons of Kuvera. In their former birth, these two sons, known as Nalakuvara and Manigriva, were extremely opulent and fortunate. But because of pride and false prestige, they did not care about anyone, and thus Narada Muni cursed them to become trees. Chapter 10, The Deliverance of the Yamala Arjuna Trees. King Parikshit inquired from Shukadeva Goswami, O great and powerful saint, what was the cause of Nalakuvaras and Manigrivas having been cursed by Narada Muni? What did they do that was so abominable that even Narada, the great sage, became angry at them? Kindly describe this to me. Shukadeva Goswami said, O King Parikshit, because the two sons of Kuvera had been elevated to the association of Lord Shiva, of which they were very much proud, they were allowed to wander in a garden attached to Kailas Hill on the bank of the Mandakini River. Taking advantage of this, they used to drink a kind of liquor called Varuni. Accompanied by women singing after them, they would wander in that garden of flowers, their eyes always rolling in intoxication. Within the waters of the Mandakini Ganges, which were crowded with gardens of lotus flowers, the two sons of Kuvera would enjoy young girls, just like two male elephants enjoying in the water with female elephants. O Maharaj Parikshit, by some auspicious opportunity for the two boys, the great saint Devarshi Narada once appeared there by chance. Seeing them intoxicated, with rolling eyes, he could understand their situation. Upon seeing Narada, the naked young girls of the demigods were very much ashamed. afraid of being cursed, they covered their bodies with their garments. But the two sons of Kuvera did not do so. Instead, not caring about Narada, they remained naked. Seeing the two sons of the demigods naked and intoxicated by opulence and false prestige, they rushed in Narada in order to show them special mercy, desired to give them a special curse. Thus he spoke as follows. Among all the attractions of material enjoyment, the attraction of riches bewilders one's intelligence more than having beautiful bodily features, taking birth in an aristocratic family, and being learned. When one is uneducated but falsely puffed up by wealth, the result is that one engages his wealth in enjoying wine, women, and gambling. Unable to control their senses, rascals who are falsely proud of their riches or their birth in aristocratic families are so cruel that to maintain their perishable bodies, which they think will never grow old or die, they kill poor animals without mercy. Sometimes they kill animals merely to enjoy an excursion. While living, one may be proud of one's body, thinking oneself a very big man, minister, president, or even demigod. But whatever one may be, after death, this body will turn either into worms, into stool, or into ashes. If one kills poor animals to satisfy the temporary whims of this body, one does not know that he will suffer in his next birth, for such a sinful miscreant must go to hell and suffer the results of his actions. While alive, does this body belong to its employer, to the self, to the father, the mother, or the mother's father? Does it belong to the person who takes it away by force, to the slave master who purchases it, or to the sons who burn it in the fire? Or, if the body is not burned, does it belong to the dogs that eat it? Among the many possible claimants, who is the rightful claimant? Not to ascertain this, but instead to maintain the body by sinful activities is not good. This body, after all, is produced by the unmanifested nature, and again annihilated and merged in the natural elements. Therefore, it is the common property of everyone. Under the circumstances, who but a rascal claims this property as his own, and while maintaining it, commits such sinful activities as killing animals just to satisfy his whims? Unless one is a rascal, one cannot commit such sinful activities. Atheistic fools and rascals who are very much proud of wealth fail to see things as they are. Therefore, returning them to poverty is the proper ointment for their eyes, so they may see things as they are. At least a poverty-stricken man can realize how painful poverty is, and therefore he will not want others to be in a painful condition like his own. By seeing their faces, one whose body has been pricked by pins can understand the pain of others who are pinpricked. Realizing that this pain is the same for everyone, he does not want others to suffer in this way. But one who has never been pricked by pins cannot understand this pain. A poverty-stricken man must automatically undergo austerities and penances because he does not have the wealth to possess anything. Thus his false prestige is vanquished. Always in need of food, shelter, and clothing, he must be satisfied with what is obtained by the mercy of Providence. Undergoing such compulsory austerities is good for him, because this purifies him and completely frees him from false ego. Always hungry, longing for sufficient food, a poverty-stricken man gradually becomes weaker and weaker. Having no extra potency, his senses are automatically pacified. A poverty-stricken man, therefore, is unable to perform harmful, envious activities. In other words, such a man automatically gains the results of the austerities and penances adopted voluntarily by saintly persons. Saintly persons may freely associate with those who are poverty-stricken, but not with those who are rich. A poverty-stricken man, by association with saintly persons, very soon becomes uninterested in material desires, and the dirty things within the core of his heart are cleansed away. Saintly persons think of Krishna 24 hours a day. They have no other interest. Why should people neglect the association of such exalted spiritual personalities and try to associate with materialists, taking shelter of non-devotees, most of whom are proud and rich? Therefore, since these two persons, drunk with the liquor named Varuni or Madhvi, and unable to control their senses, have been blinded by the pride of celestial opulence and have become attached to women, I shall relieve them of their false prestige. These two young men, Nalakuvara and Manigriva, are by fortune the sons of the great demigod Kuvera. But because of false prestige and madness after drinking liquor, they are so fallen that they are naked but cannot understand that they are. Therefore, because they are living like trees, which are naked but are unconscious, these two young men should receive the bodies of trees. This will be proper punishment. Nonetheless, after they become trees and until they are released, by my mercy they will have remembrance of their past sinful activities. Moreover, by my special favor, after the expiry of 100 years by the measurement of the demigods, they will be able to see the supreme personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, face to face, and thus revive their real position as devotees. Shukadev Goswami continued, having thus spoken, the great saint Devarshi Narada returned to his ashram, known as Narayan Ashram, and Nalakubra and Manigriva became twin Arjun trees, the supreme personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, to fulfill the truthfulness of the words of the greatest devotee, Narada, slowly went to that spot where the twin Arjun trees were standing. Krishna thought, although these two young men are the sons of the very rich Kubera, and I have nothing to do with them, Devarshi Narada is my very dear and affectionate devotee, and therefore because he wanted me to come face to face with them, I must do so for their deliverance. Having thus decided, Krishna soon entered between the two Arjun trees, and thus the big mortar to which he was bound turned crosswise and stuck between them. By dragging behind him with great force the wooden mortar tied to his belly, the boy Krishna uprooted the two trees. By the great strength of the Supreme Person, the two trees with their trunks, leaves, and branches trembled severely and fell to the ground with a great crash. Thereafter, in that very place where the two Arjun trees had fallen, two great perfect personalities who appeared like fire personified came out of the two trees. The effulgence of their beauty illuminating all directions, with bowed heads they offered obeisances to Krishna, and with hands folded they spoke the following words. Krishna Krishna Mahayogins Tumajat Purushakparaho Vipta Viptam Idam Vishram Rupam Te Brahmanavadu Jamekaksava Bhutanam Deha Satmindriyeshwara Jamevakaro Bhagavan Vishnurangaya Ishwara Jamahan Pakati Sukshma Rajaksat Pratamomahi Jameva Purusho Jaksha Savakshet Vakarave Griyamanais Tamagra Yogakarai Pakatai Gunai Kong Vihahati Vigyatum Praksidham Gunasambhita Dasmaitabhyam Bhagavati Vasudevaya Vedase Atman Jyota Gunaischam Namahimne Brahmane Namaha. O Lord Krishna, Lord Krishna, your opulent mysticism is inconceivable. You are the supreme original person, the cause of all causes, immediate and remote, and you are beyond this material creation. Learned Brahmins know that you are everything, and that this cosmic manifestation, in its gross and subtle aspects, is your form. You are the supreme personality of Godhead, the controller of everything. The body, life, ego, and senses of every living entity are your own self. You are the supreme person, Vishnu, the imperishable controller. You are the time factor, the immediate cause, and you are material nature, consisting of the three modes, passion, goodness, and ignorance. You are the original cause of this material manifestation. You are the supersoul, and therefore you know everything within the core of the heart of every living entity. O Lord, you exist before the creation. Therefore, who, trapped by a body of material qualities in this material world, can understand you? O Lord, whose glories are covered by your own energy, you are the supreme personality of Godhead. You are Sankarshan, the origin of creation, and you are Vasudeva, the origin of the Chaturvyuha. Because you are everything and are therefore the supreme Brahman, we simply offer our respectful obeisances unto you. Appearing in bodies like those of an ordinary fish, tortoise, and hog, you exhibit activities impossible for such creatures to perform. Extraordinary, incomparable, transcendental activities of unlimited power and strength. These bodies of yours, therefore, are not made of material elements, but are incarnations of your supreme personality. You are the same supreme personality of Godhead, who have now appeared with full potency for the benefit of all living entities within this material world. O supremely auspicious Lord, we offer our respectful obeisances unto you, who are the supreme good. O most famous descendant and controller of the Yadu dynasty, O son of Vasudeva, O most peaceful one, let us offer our obeisances unto your lotus feet. O supreme form, we are always servants of your servants, especially of Narada Muni. Now give us permission to leave for our home. It is by the grace and mercy of Narada Muni that we have been able to see you face to face. Henceforward, may all our words describe your pastimes. May our ears engage in oral reception of your glories. May our hands, legs, and other senses engage in actions pleasing to you. And may our minds always think of your lotus feet. May our heads offer our obeisances to everything within this world, because all things are also your different forms. And may our eyes see the forms of Vaishnavas who are non-different from you. Shukadev Goswami continued, the two young demigods thus offered prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although Sri Krishna, the Supreme Godhead, is the master of all, and was certainly Gokuleshwara, the master of Gokula, he was bound to the wooden mortar by the ropes of the gopis, and therefore, smiling widely, he spoke to the sons of Kuvera the following words. The great saint Narada Muni is very merciful. By his curse, he showed the greatest favor to both of you, who were mad after material opulence and who had thus become blind. Although you fell from the higher planet Svargaloka and became trees, you were most favored by him. I knew all of these incidents from the very beginning. When one is face to face with the sun, there is no longer darkness for one's eyes. Similarly, when one is face to face with a sadhu, a devotee, who is fully determined and surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one will no longer be subject to material bondage. O Nalakuvara and Manigriva, now you may both return home. Since you desire to be always absorbed in my devotional service, your desire to develop love and affection for me will be fulfilled, and now you will never fall from that platform. Shukadev Goswami said, the Supreme Personality of Godhead having spoken to the two demigods in this way, they circumambulated the Lord, who was bound to the wooden mortar, and offered obeisances to him. After taking the permission of Lord Krishna, they returned to their respective homes. Chapter 11, The Childhood Pastimes of Sri Krishna. Shukadev Goswami continued, O Maharaj Parikshit, when the Yamalajan trees fell, all the coward men in the neighborhood, hearing the fierce sound and fearing thunderbolts, went to the spot. There they saw the fallen Yamala Arjun trees on the ground, but they were bewildered because even though they could directly perceive that the trees had fallen, they could not trace out the cause for their having done so. Krishna was bound by the rope to the mortar which he had been dragging, but how could he have pulled down the trees? Who had actually done it? Where was the source for this incident? Considering all these astounding things, the cowherd men were doubtful and bewildered. Then all the cowherd boys said, it is Krishna who has done this. When he was in between the two trees, the mortar fell crosswise. Krishna dragged the mortar, and the two trees fell down. After that, two beautiful men came out of the trees. We have seen this with our own eyes. Because of intense paternal affection, the cowherd men, headed by Nanda, could not believe that Krishna could have uprooted the trees in such a wonderful way. Therefore, they could not put their faith in the words of the boys. Some of the men, however, were in doubt. Since Krishna was predicted to equal Narayan, they thought, it might be that he could have done it. When Nanda Maharaj saw his son bound with ropes to the wooden mortar and dragging it, he smiled and released Krishna from his bonds. The gopis would say, if you dance, my dear Krishna, then I shall give you half a sweetmeat. By saying these words, or by clapping their hands, all the gopis encouraged Krishna in different ways. At such times, although he was the supremely powerful personality of Godhead, he would smile and dance according to their desire, as if he were a wooden doll in their hands. Sometimes he would sing very loudly, at their bidding. In this way, Krishna came completely under the control of the gopis. Sometimes Mother Yashoda and her gopi friends would tell Krishna, bring this article, or bring that article. Sometimes they would order him to bring a wooden plank, wooden shoes, or a wooden measuring pot, and Krishna, when thus ordered by the mothers, would try to bring them. Sometimes, however, as if unable to raise these things, he would touch them and stand there. Just to invite the pleasure of his relatives, he would strike his body with his arms to show that he had sufficient strength. To pure devotees throughout the world who could understand his activities, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, exhibited how much he can be subdued by his devotees, his servants. In this way, he increased the pleasure of the Brijvasis by his childhood activities. Once a woman selling fruit was calling, "Oh, inhabitants of Brajabhumi, if you want to purchase some fruits, come here." Upon hearing this, Krishna immediately took some grains and went to barter as if he needed some fruits. While Krishna was going to the fruit vendor very hastily, most of the grains he was holding fell. Nonetheless, the fruit vendor filled Krishna's hands with fruits, and her fruit basket was immediately filled with jewels and gold. Once, after the uprooting of the Yamala Arjun trees, Rohini Devi went to call Rama and Krishna, who had both gone to the riverside and were playing with the other boys with deep attention. Because of being too attached to playing with the other boys, Krishna and Balaram did not return upon being called by Rohini. Therefore, Rohini sent Mother Yashoda to call them back, because Mother Yashoda was more affectionate to Krishna and Balaram. Krishna and Balaram, being attached to their play, were playing with the other boys although it was very late. Therefore, Mother Yashoda called them back for lunch. Because of her ecstatic love and affection for Krishna and Balaram, milk flowed from her breasts. Mother Yashoda said, "My dear son Krishna, lotus-eyed Krishna, come here and drink the milk of my breast. My dear darling, you must be very tired because of hunger and the fatigue of playing so long. There is no need to play anymore. My dear Baladev, best of our family, please come immediately with your younger brother, Krishna. You both ate in the morning, and now you ought to eat something more. Nanda Maharaj, the king of Braja, is now waiting to eat. Oh, my dear son Balaram, he is waiting for you. Therefore, come back to please us. All the boys playing with you and Krishna should now go to their homes. My dear son Krishna, because of playing all day, your body has become covered with dust and sand. Therefore, come back, take your bath, and cleanse yourself. Today the moon is conjoined with the auspicious star of your birth. Therefore, be pure and give cows and charity to the Brahmins. Just see how all your playmates of your own age have been cleansed and decorated with beautiful ornaments by their mothers. You should come here, and after you have taken your bath, eaten your lunch, and been decorated with ornaments, you may play with your friends again. My dear King Parikit, because of intense love and affection, Mother Yashoda, Krishna's mother, considered Krishna, who was at the peak of all opulences, to be her own son. Thus she took Krishna by the hand, along with Balaram, and brought them home, where she performed her duties by fully bathing them, dressing them, and feeding them. Sri Shukadev Goswami continued, "Then one time, having seen the great disturbances in Brihadvan, all the elderly persons among the cowherd men, headed by Nanda Maharaj, assembled and began to consider what to do to stop the continuous disturbing situations in Braja. At this meeting of all the inhabitants of Gokula, a cowherd man named Upananda, who was the most mature in age and knowledge and was very experienced according to time, circumstances, and country, made this suggestion for the benefit of Rama and Krishna. He said, 'My dear friends, the cowherd men, in order to do good to this place, Gokula, we should leave it, because so many disturbances are always occurring here, just for the purpose of killing Rama and Krishna. The child Krishna, simply by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was somehow or other rescued from the hands of the Rakshasi Putana, who was determined to kill him. Then, again by the mercy of the Supreme Godhead, the hand cart missed falling upon the child. Then again, the demon Trinavarta, in the form of a whirlwind, took the child away into the dangerous sky to kill him, but the demon fell down onto a slab of stone. In that case also, by the mercy of Lord Vishnu or his associates, the child was saved. Even the other day, neither Krishna nor any of his playmates died from the falling of the two trees, although the children were near the trees or even between them. This also is to be considered the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All these incidents are being caused by some unknown demon. Before he comes here to create another disturbance, it is our duty to go somewhere else with the boys until there are no more disturbances. Between Nandeshwar and Mahavan is a place named Vrindavan. This place is very suitable because it is lush with grass, plants, and creepers for the cows and other animals. It has nice gardens and tall mountains and is full of facilities for the happiness of all the gopis and gopis and our animals. Therefore, let us immediately go today. There is no need to wait any further. If you agree to my proposal, let us prepare all the bullock carts and put the cows in front of us, and let us go there." Upon hearing this advice from Upananda, the cowherd men unanimously agreed. "Very nice," they said, "very nice." Thus they sorted out their household affairs, placed their clothing and other paraphernalia on the carts, and immediately started for Vrindavan. Keeping all the old men, women, children, and household paraphernalia on the bullock carts, and keeping all the cows in front, the cowherd men picked up their bows and arrows with great care and sounded bugles made of horn. "O King Parikshit," in this way, with bugles vibrating all around, the cowherd men, accompanied by their priests, began their journey. The cowherd women, riding on the bullock carts, were dressed very nicely with excellent garments, and their bodies, especially their breasts, were decorated with fresh kumkum powder. As they rode, they began to chant with great pleasure the pastimes of Krishna. Thus hearing about the pastimes of Krishna and Balaram with great pleasure, Mother Yashoda and Rohini Devi, so as not to be separated from Krishna and Balaram for even a moment, got up with them on one bullock cart. In this situation, they all looked very beautiful. In this way, they entered Vrindavan, where it is always pleasing to live in all seasons. They made a temporary place to inhabit by placing their bullock carts around them in the shape of a half moon. O King Parikshit, when Rama and Krishna saw Vrindavan, Govardhan, and the banks of the river Yamuna, they both enjoyed great pleasure. Acting like small boys and talking in half-broken language, Krishna and Balaram gave transcendental pleasure to all the inhabitants of Braja. In due course of time, they became old enough to take care of the calves. Not far away from their residential quarters, both Krishna and Balaram, equipped with all kinds of playthings, played with other cowherd boys and began to tend the small calves. Sometimes Krishna and Balaram would play on their flutes. Sometimes they would throw ropes and stones devised for getting fruits from the trees. Sometimes they would throw only stones. And sometimes, their ankle bells tinkling, they would play football with fruits like bale and amalaki. Sometimes they would cover themselves with blankets and imitate cows and bulls and fight with one another, roaring loudly. And sometimes they would imitate the voices of the animals. In this way they enjoyed sporting, exactly like two ordinary human children. One day, while Rama and Krishna, along with their playmates, were tending the calves on the bank of the river Yamuna, another demon arrived there, desiring to kill them. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead saw that the demon had assumed the form of a calf and entered among the groups of other calves, he pointed out to Baladev, "Here is another demon." Then he very slowly approached the demon, as if he did not understand the demon's intentions. Thereafter, Sri Krishna caught the demon by the hind legs and tail, whirled the demon's whole body very strongly until the demon was dead, and threw him into the top of a kapita tree, which then fell down along with the body of the demon who had assumed a great form. Upon seeing the dead body of the demon, all the cowherd boys exclaimed, "Well done, Krishna! Very good, very good. Thank you." In the upper planetary system, all the demigods were pleased, and therefore they showered flowers on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. After killing a demon, Krishna and Balaram finished their breakfast in the morning, and while continuing to take care of the calves, they wandered here and there. Krishna and Balaram, the Supreme Personalities of Godhead, who maintain the entire creation, now took charge of the calves as if cowherd boys. One day, all the boys, including Krishna and Balaram, each boy taking his own group of calves, brought the calves to a reservoir of water, desiring to allow them to drink. After the animals drank water, the boys drank water there also. Right by the reservoir, the boys saw a gigantic body resembling a mountain peak, broken and struck down by a thunderbolt. They were afraid even to see such a huge living being. That great-bodied demon was named Bakasura. He had assumed the body of a duck with a very sharp beak. Having come there, he immediately swallowed Krishna. When Balaram and the other boys saw that Krishna had been devoured by the gigantic duck, they became almost unconscious, like senses without life. Krishna, who was the father of Lord Brahma, but who was acting as the son of a coward man, became like fire, burning the root of the demon's throat, and the demon Bakasura immediately disgorged him. When the demon saw that Krishna, although having been swallowed, was unharmed, he immediately attacked Krishna again with his sharp beak. When Krishna, the leader of the Vaishnavas, saw that the demon Bakasura, the friend of Kamsa, was endeavoring to attack him, with his arms he captured the demon by the two halves of his beak, and in the presence of all the coward boys, Krishna very easily bifurcated him, as a child splits a blade of virana grass. By thus killing the demon, Krishna very much pleased the denizens of heaven. At that time, the celestial denizens of the higher planetary system showered Mallika Pushpa, flowers grown in Nandana Kanana, upon Krishna, the enemy of Bakasura. They also congratulated him by sounding celestial kettle drums and conch shells and by offering prayers. Seeing this, the coward boys were struck with wonder. Just as the senses are pacified when consciousness and life return, so when Krishna was freed from this danger, all the boys, including Balaram, thought that their life had been restored. They embraced Krishna in good consciousness, and then they collected their own calves and returned to Brajabhumi, where they declared the incident loudly. When the coward men and women heard about the killing of Bakasura in the forest, they were very much astonished. Upon seeing Krishna and hearing the story, they received Krishna very eagerly, thinking that Krishna and the other boys had returned from the mouth of death. Thus they looked upon Krishna and the boys with silent eyes, not wanting to turn their eyes aside now that the boys were safe. The coward men, headed by Nanda Maharaj, began to consider. It is very astonishing that although this boy Krishna has many times faced many varied causes of death, by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it was these causes of fear that were killed instead of him. Although the causes of death, the daityas, were very fierce, they could not kill this boy Krishna. Rather, because they came to kill innocent boys, as soon as they approached, they themselves were killed, exactly like flies attacking fire. The words of persons in full knowledge of Brahman never become untrue. It is very wonderful that whatever Garga Muni predicted, we are now actually experiencing in all detail. In this way, all the coward men, headed by Nanda Maharaj, enjoyed topics about the pastimes of Krishna and Balaram with great transcendental pleasure, and they could not even perceive material tribulations. Thus, Krishna and Balaram passed their childhood age in Brajabhumi by engaging in activities of childish play, such as playing hide-and-seek, constructing make-believe bridges on the ocean, and jumping here and there like monkeys. Srila Rupa Goswami prays,
Apispara modi pratipada sunako timadare Kodana gramanta bahatita vali lara sajare Mano vatsak patum vishya vishagate vishati me Kapayishchato nam dhamiyat mamantan kapate.
O Krishna, the very fragrant river of your loving pastimes, which is a million times sweeter than nectar, flows within the Srimad Bhagavatam and other Puranas. But instead of drinking at that river, the calf of my mind prefers to enter a cave and drink the poison of sense gratification. O Krishna, O Lord of the calves, please quickly curb the calf of my mind with your stick of mercy. Chapter 12, The Killing of the Demon Agasa. Shukadev Goswami continued, O King, one day Krishna decided to take his breakfast as a picnic in the forest. Having risen early in the morning, he blew his bugle made of horn and woke all the coward boys and calves with its beautiful sound. Then Krishna and the boys, keeping their respective groups of calves before them, proceeded from Brajabhumi to the forest. At that time, hundreds and thousands of cowherd boys came out of their respective homes in Brajabhumi and joined Krishna, keeping before them their hundreds and thousands of groups of calves. The boys were very beautiful, and they were equipped with lunch bags, bugles, flutes, and sticks for controlling the calves. Along with the cowherd boys in their own groups of calves, Krishna came out with an unlimited number of calves assembled. Then all the boys began to sport in the forest in a greatly playful spirit. Although all these boys were already decorated by their mothers with ornaments of kacha, gunja, pearls, and gold, when they went into the forest, they further decorated themselves with fruits, green leaves, bunches of flowers, peacock feathers, and soft minerals. All the cowherd boys used to steal one another's lunch bags. When a boy came to understand that his bag had been taken away, the other boys would throw it farther away, to a more distant place, and those standing there would throw it still farther. When the proprietor of the bag became disappointed, the other boys would laugh, the proprietor would cry, and then the bag would be returned. Sometimes Krishna would go to a somewhat distant place to see the beauty of the forest. Then all the other boys would run to accompany him, each one saying, "I shall be the first to run and touch Krishna. I shall touch Krishna first." In this way they enjoyed life by repeatedly touching Krishna. All the boys would be differently engaged. Some boys blew their flutes, and others blew bugles made of horn. Some imitated the buzzing of the bumblebees, and others imitated the voice of the cuckoo. Some boys imitated flying birds by running after the birds' shadows on the ground. Some imitated the beautiful movements and attractive postures of the swans. Some sat down with the ducks, sitting silently, and others imitated the dancing of the peacocks. Some boys attracted young monkeys in the trees. Some jumped into the trees, imitating the monkeys. Some made faces as the monkeys were accustomed to do, and others jumped from one branch to another. Some boys went to the waterfalls and crossed over the river, jumping with the frogs, and when they saw their own reflections on the water, they would laugh. They would also condemn the sounds of their own echoes. In this way, all the cowherd boys used to play with Krishna, who is the source of the Brahman effulgence for jnanis desiring to merge into that effulgence, who is the supreme personality of Godhead for devotees who have accepted eternal servitorship, and who for ordinary persons is but another ordinary child. The cowherd boys, having accumulated the results of pious activities for many lives, were able to associate in this way with the supreme personality of Godhead. How can one explain their great fortune? Yogis may undergo severe austerities and penances for many births by practicing yama, niyama, asana, and pranayama, none of which are easily performed. Yet in due course of time, when these yogis attain the perfection of controlling the mind, they will still be unable to taste even a particle of dust from the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What then can we describe about the great fortune of the inhabitants of Brajabhumi, Vrindavan, with whom the Supreme Personality of Godhead personally lived and who saw the Lord face to face? My dear King Parikshit, thereafter there appeared a great demon named Agasura, whose death was being awaited even by the demigods. The demigods drank nectar every day, but still they feared this great demon and awaited his death. This demon could not tolerate the transcendental pleasure being enjoyed in the forest by the cowherd boys. Agasura, who had been sent by Kansa, was the younger brother of Putana and Bakasura. Therefore, when he came and saw Krishna at the head of all the cowherd boys, he thought, "This Krishna has killed my sister and brother, Putana and Bakasura. Therefore, to please them both, I shall kill this Krishna, along with his assistants, the other cowherd boys. If somehow or other I can make Krishna and his associates serve as the last offering of sesame and water for the departed souls of my brother and sister, then the inhabitants of Brajabhumi, for whom these boys are the life and soul, will automatically die. If there is no life, there is no need for the body. Consequently, when their sons are dead, naturally all the inhabitants of Braja will die." After thus deciding, that crooked Agasura assumed the form of a huge python as thick as a big mountain and as long as 8 miles. Having assumed this wonderful python's body, he spread his mouth like a big cave in the mountains and lay down on the road, expecting to swallow Krishna and his associates, the cowherd boys. His lower lip rested on the surface of the earth, and his upper lip was touching the clouds in the sky. The borders of his mouth resembled the sides of a big cave in a mountain, and the middle of his mouth was as dark as possible. His tongue resembled a broad traffic way, his breath was like a warm wind, and his eyes blazed like fire. Upon seeing this demon's wonderful form, which resembled a great python, the boys thought that it must be a beautiful scenic spot of Vrindavan. Thereafter, they imagined it to be similar to the mouth of a great python. In other words, the boys, unafraid, thought that it was a statue made in the shape of a great python for the enjoyment of their pastimes. The boys said, "Dear friends, is this creature dead, or is it actually a living python with its mouth spread wide just to swallow us all? Kindly clear up this doubt." "Dear friends, this is certainly an animal sitting here to swallow us all. Its upper lip resembles a cloud reddened by the sunshine, and its lower lip resembles the reddish shadows of a cloud. On the left and right, the two depressions resembling mountain caves are the corners of its mouth, and the high mountain peaks are its teeth. In length and breadth, the animal's tongue resembles a broad traffic way, and the inside of its mouth is very, very dark, like a cave in a mountain. The hot, fiery wind is the breath coming out of its mouth, which is giving off the bad smell of burning flesh because of all the dead bodies he has eaten. Has this living creature come to swallow us? If he does so, he will immediately be killed like Bagasura without delay." Thus the boys looked at the beautiful face of Krishna, the enemy of Bagasura, and laughing loudly and clapping their hands, they entered the mouth of the python. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who was situated as Antaryami, the Supersoul, in the core of everyone's heart, heard the boys talking among themselves about the artificial python. In the meantime, while Krishna was considering how to stop them, all the coward boys entered the mouth of the demon. The demon, however, did not swallow them, for he was thinking of his relatives who had been killed by Krishna and was just waiting for Krishna to enter his mouth. Krishna saw that all the coward boys, who did not know anyone but him as their lord, had now gone out of his hand and were helpless, having entered like straws into the fire of the abdomen of Agastya, who was death personified. It was intolerable for Krishna to be separated from his friends, the coward boys. Therefore, as if seeing that this had been arranged by his internal potency, Krishna was momentarily struck with wonder and unsure of what to do. Now, what was to be done? How could both the killing of this demon and the saving of the devotees be performed simultaneously? Krishna, being unlimitedly potent, decided to wait for an intelligent means by which he could simultaneously save the boys and kill the demon. Then he entered the mouth of Agasura. When Krishna entered the mouth of Agasura, the demigods hiding behind the clouds exclaimed, "Alas, alas!" But the friends of Agasura, like Kamsa and other demons, were jubilant. When the invincible Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, heard the demigods crying, "Alas, alas!" from behind the clouds, he immediately enlarged himself within the demon's throat just to save himself and the coward boys, his own associates, from the demon who wished to smash them. Then, because Krishna had increased the size of his body, the demon extended his own body to a very large size. Nonetheless, his breathing stopped, he suffocated, and his eyes rolled here and there and popped out. The demon's life air, however, could not pass through any outlet, and therefore it finally burst out through a hole in the top of the demon's head. When all the demon's life air had passed away through that hole in the top of his head, Krishna glanced over the dead calves and coward boys and brought them back to life. Then Mukunda, who can give one liberation, came out from the demon's mouth with his friends and the calves. From the body of the gigantic python, a glaring effulgence came out, illuminating all directions, and stayed individually in the sky until Krishna came out from the corpse's mouth. Then, as all the demigods looked on, this effulgence entered into Krishna's body. Thereafter, everyone being pleased, the demigods began to shower flowers from Nandana Kanana, the celestial dancing girls began to dance, and the Gandharvas, who are famous for singing, offered songs of prayer. The drummers began to beat their kettle drums, and the Brahmins offered Vedic hymns. In this way, both in the heavens and on earth, everyone began to perform his own duties, glorifying the Lord. When Lord Brahma heard the wonderful ceremony going on near his planet, accompanied by music and songs and sounds of Jai, Jai, he immediately came down to see the function. Upon seeing so much glorification of Lord Krishna, he was completely astonished. O King Parikshit, when the python-shaped body of Agasura dried up into merely a big skin, it became a wonderful place for the inhabitants of Vrindavan to visit, and it remained so for a long, long time. This incident of Krishna's saving himself and his associates from death and of giving deliverance to Agasura, who had assumed the form of a python, took place when Krishna was 5 years old. It was disclosed in Brajabhumi after 1 year, as if it had taken place on that very day. Krishna is the cause of all causes. The causes and effects of the material world, both higher and lower, are all created by the Supreme Lord, the original controller. When Krishna appeared as the son of Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda, he did so by his causeless mercy. Consequently, for him to exhibit his unlimited opulence was not at all wonderful. Indeed, he showed such great mercy that even Agasura, the most sinful miscreant, was elevated to being one of his associates and achieving Sarupya Mukti, which is usually impossible for materially contaminated persons to attain. If even only once or even by force one brings the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead into one's mind, one can attain the supreme salvation by the mercy of Krishna, as did Agasura. What then is to be said of those whose hearts the Supreme Personality of Godhead enters when he appears as an incarnation? Or those who always think of the lotus feet of the Lord, who is the source of transcendental bliss for all living entities, and by whom all illusion is completely removed?